what is going on? Miscommunication between Maton and Segura. Run scores. There have been at least five misplays tonight by the Phillies defensively.
You know, offense, you're going to get shut down sometimes. That's going to happen. But catch the ball. Just catch the ball. That's all we need to do. And I don't know what that is. They work every day. They do their stuff. It has to be. They're just not following the ball in their glove. Miscommunication. It shouldn't happen at this level.
Certainly shouldn't. Good morning, everybody. That is a frustrated Joe Girardi after last night's loss to the Toronto Blue Jays. And you heard just a Little League play that occurred earlier on, thanks to NBC Sports Philadelphia for that cut. I'm Glenn Mack now here on a Sunday morning with you. Ray Dinger remains under the weather. We got no Ray today. We got a deep bench. We pulled up our pal Jack Fritz, who produces the WIP Afternoon Show with Ike and John Marks. Good morning, Jack. How are you?
Glenn, good to be here. I hope I am more Greg Dobbs in 08 than Michael Martinez.
I have no doubt. You and I have worked together a lot producing the pregame shows. You always do a great job for us producing Tell Us Your Story, and you and I have argued baseball and other sports for a long time, so I have no question that this is going to be a lot of fun today. We invite people to join us at 215-592-9494, and Ray and I often start our show with, while you were sleeping, a report of last night's game. And I hope people didn't watch this one. The Phillies in Dunedin, Florida, playing the Blue Jays. Toronto still not allowing them to play at home. Jack, this may have been, I don't know if it was the worst game of the year, but it may have been the most unwatchable game of the year.
Well, that says a lot about this Phillies team, because it seems like they have one of these every week. I mean, Thursday was a classic getaway day where they're like, you know what, 2 hours and 45 minutes, let's get out of here and get on the road. And then last night happens, and it's the same stuff that we've seen this year. The defense is unbelievable. Like, I didn't think the Scott Kingery led defense of 2018 when he was playing shortstop, I didn't think I'd see a worse defensive team, but it feels like that's where we're at. And you know, again, with the offense, you know, like, for as much as we complain about the bullpen, the pitching staff, the defense, like, this team was built to score runs. This team was built to put runs on the board. They have too much talent. They've invested too much money. And again, last night, like, they had runners on base a lot. They left them all out there. It was just an excruciating game and another disappointing start for this offense.
Yeah, they get shut out, and they get shut out by a starter. I know that they brought in, I think, four relievers, but the Blue Jays starter entered the game with an ERA of 10.54.
Is that bad?
Yeah, that's bad at any level. So, and they can't score a run. So I trust your baseball chops. I really do. Is it that they are showing a lack of patience? Is it that they, I mean, they've been through five batting coaches in the last 5 or 6 years. I can't blame the batting coach. These guys are pros. Can you put your finger on it at all?
I can't. It's the weirdest thing ever, because a lot of times with baseball analysis, you just have to look at the back of the baseball card. And the back of the baseball card with these guys is that they're going to get the job done on most nights. Andrew McCutchen's been coming around a little bit more. Bryce has been good this year. JT's been good this year. Reese has been up and down, but in clutch situations has been good. It's just they can never get humming at the same time. And you know, the strikeouts are absurd. You know, I was never a big believer in, oh, strikeouts are this huge deal. And then I saw this team, and it's like, no, it's they can't put the bat on the ball. And last night was just another example of a guy being able to consistently locate up in the zone, and it was just getting above their swings. And it's one through eight. It never feels like they can get rolling at the same time. It's been that way for the last couple of years. And I don't think it's hitting coach. I don't think it's any of that stuff. I just think that these guys are almost all trying to press at the same time. And they're not, they're trying to do too much. They're trying to hit home runs all the time rather than putting together innings and putting together rallies and putting together runs, because they don't do that. They always play for the big inning. And to me, that's a faulty way to approach things.
Okay. Well, and so that, I mean, this is an overall problem with baseball, but you're kind of making them the poster boys for this, which is what baseball is now, is you go for the home run, don't worry about the strikeout, and hey, if you can get a walk, that's great. And you don't go to the opposite field. You don't shorten up on the swing. You don't do the things that keep innings going. I really dislike this entire aspect about Major League Baseball today, but I don't need to do that, Screed. I've done it before. Everybody knows what it is. Analytics took over baseball. I'm not anti-analytics, but I'm anti-exciting, interesting baseball, and that's what it is. And the Phillies just seem to be so caught up in that. Two strikes on a guy. Okay, you got two strikes. Let's battle it off a little bit. No, they swing from the heels and they're done. And it drives me nuts with this team.
Yeah, yeah, and they're right now they are third in the league in strikeout percentage, and I just don't think you can consistently win games when you are striking out the rate that they are, because it, for as great as during the regular season hitting home runs and getting the ball out of the ballpark and playing for those big innings, it works during the regular season. But what happens in the seventh, eighth, ninth inning when you got to win a ball game? Are you able to do the little things to get a run in and help your team win? And when it comes to postseason baseball, like you have to be able to score runs in different ways. And I just think the approach of strikeouts and all that and the strikeout rate that they're posting right now, which is, again, third worst in the league, like I don't think that's a consistent enough offensive plan to win. And, I mean, Bryce strikes out a good amount. Their best hitter strike out a lot. I mean, Alec Bohm's a guy who, when he came up last year, Glenn, I felt like was a guy that was going to put the bat on the ball consistently. He's going to drive it to all fields. And what we've seen this year, he's striking out just as much as everyone else. Reese's strikeout rate has jumped by 10%. They have to make more consistent contact if they're going to win. And I hope that Bohm doesn't start falling into the trap of maybe what's going on down there, because that would be ruining is a talented hitter.
Yeah, let's talk about him, because he's really having a dreadful, dreadful season so far. I know he's been good at driving in runners on base. He's got 21 RBIs, which is okay in 40 games. It's nothing special, but that's fine. The rest of his game has just been dreadful. As you mentioned, he's got 42 strikeouts and 147 at-bats, as opposed to 8 walks. And I always, you know, we'll look at that ratio, and it's awful. He's hitting .218. His slugging percentage is .340. I mean, that's you know, 1975 shortstop slugging percentage. And his defense is atrocious. His defense last night was incredibly bad, 3 or 4 plays. I had high hopes for him last year. Let's give your podcast a plug. What's the name of your podcast?
It's called High Hopes.
There you go. Done with.
James Seltzer of the Midday Show and the Go Birds podcast.
And when does that drop?
We do it right after each series. So
there you go. Okay.
Sunday nights or Thursday nights.
All right. What's up with him?
He's just getting crushed with fastballs, and he's a guy that has to be able to hit fastballs. Everyone has to hit fastballs these days. I mean, you see the velocity. It's 98 every time the guys come out of the bullpen. And sure, it's great that he'll hit the ball to the right side, and he'll try to hit to all fields. But what teams are doing right now is they're just pounding him with fastballs in until he can learn to pull them. And until he's able to consistently do that, like, guys are just going to continue to pound him in, and sliders away have given him a lot of trouble. So, like, he's batting .180 on fastballs this year, which, I mean, in modern baseball, you got to just be able to square up a fastball more than that. Like, it's okay. Like, his defense has been actually, like, I thought it was going to be way worse than this. He still is a very bad defensive player.
He's terrible defensive player.
Terrible. But you live with that if he's driving in runs and hitting close to .300. Like, I thought Alec Bohm was going to be a .300 hitter with a ton of doubles and like maybe 25 home runs, but we're not even seeing that this year. Like, he's gotten unlucky. I get it. Like, he's hitting the ball right at people, but it's not even as hard as it used to be. It's more weak dribblers, and I thought Wilson Valdez used to ground to a lot of double plays, but it seems like Alec Bohm is kind of taking the cake there.
Yeah, all the time. Let's talk about Nola a little bit. He was not sharp early. He hung in there. He's been okay.
Yeah, he's again, like, last night was one of those starts, Glenn, and we've seen this the last, I don't know, 4 or 5 outings where it's like, yeah, he got into the seventh, got in late sixth or whatever. He allowed, you know, 4 runs or less. But, I mean, is that really what you want from Aaron Nola? I mean, it's just fine. It's last night was a fine outing. He allowed 3 runs.
It was okay.
Yeah,
I know it's defined as a quality start, but no, not really.
Yeah, exactly. And I guess I never really put the 2 and 2 together, but I was looking at his road stats. And at home, his ERAs are consistently, and this year it's actually 1.4, which is great, obviously. But consistently, it's like 2.5-ish. So he's obviously very good at home. On the road, Glenn, 2018, he had a 2.41 ERA. obvious outlier. He was unbelievable. Third in the Cy Young. We all felt like we were getting, you know, our ace. We thought we were getting the ace of the staff. 2019, 5.19 the ERA on the road. 2020, 4.26 the ERA on the road. And this year, 5.65 the ERA on the road.
Wow.
Like, he's gotta figure out how to win games on the road or get back 2018, because you know you can't make every start at home, Glenn. You gotta be able to go on the road and pitch well. And so far, he hasn't done that.
All right, and then there's another story that came out of last night's game, which is during the game, the Phillies' two best players leave. Here's Joe Girardi after the game talking about the injuries.
Harp's right shoulder, day-to-day, just some soreness. Came on tonight. JT, it's that left wrist again. Seems to bother him when he swings and misses the most. So he's day-to-day, too. I'm not sure about tomorrow for either one of them. Sleep, and we'll see what we have.
I love that Joe Girardi brings that percussion section with him.
He does.
It definitely makes the post-game news conferences better. Again, that's courtesy of our friends at NBC Sports Philadelphia. So, Bryce Harper leaves in the fourth inning with a sore right shoulder. Girardi speculated he may have hurt it in a swing in one of his two strikeouts against Anthony Kaye.
He's so far out front he pulled a shoulder out?
I guess. I think he pulled it in embarrassment, striking out against that guy. And Real Muto leaves in the eighth inning because his left wrist hurt, which I think is kind of a reappearance of an injury he had last couple weeks ago in St. Louis, right? This flared up with him a few times.
Well, yeah, it was when David Hale threw the ball 58 feet, and he jammed his glove into the ground. Yeah, so this has been a lingering thing.
So I'm guessing, well, I haven't seen the lineup yet. We'll look for it. It should be coming out soon. I'm guessing neither of those guys is playing today against the Blue Jays. Jack, who do they have left?
Well, you got Scotty Jetpacks, so, you know, everything's fine if Kingery's in there.
Okay.
I legitimately think he's the emergency catcher. He was the emergency catcher earlier this week. And I guess if they need a guy, I mean, Scotty's going to get back there.
Yeah, but who else is on the bench? I mean, do you have guys? They're farm teams are not there. This happens last night. This happens on a Saturday night. You got a game today at 1:00.
Yeah.
Are they going to have a bench of two guys?
I legitimately have no idea. I mean, I guess they would have to, if they could fly someone down. I mean, Marshawn was up last week, but I mean, it legitimately might just be Scott Kingery.
I am so frustrated.
I know.
Jack Fritz, I thought this season was going to be a 90-win battle for the playoffs, exciting season. And it's, listen, you know, it's early, and I believe they're still a game above 500, but this is my thing about the Phillies, and tell me if I'm wrong here. They're okay. They're not fun to watch. They're aggravating to watch.
Yeah, I mean, they are on most nights. It's not a fun experience. You know what? They remind me a lot of the 2018 and like 2019 teams. Like, remember they were in first place for a lot of the year, and the gay people will be like, "Wow, this team's in first place. Like, that's really impressive. They're not that talented." But it felt like, I mean, if you're using your eyes and you were watching the team on a night in, night out basis, you're like, they're not a very good team. And that's how I feel about this team too. They feel like a team that is lucky to be two games over 500. You know, but they're too talented for this. That's what frustrates me the most. Like, they're too talented. There's too many good guys on this team. Like, the 1-3, I think, are very good. You know, whether or not they're ace status, whatever. 1-3 is good. Chase Anderson's been fine. Vinny Velo is having a resurgence.
He's calm down on that resurgence. One, big fella.
And the bullpen's got
not going to be fooled again on that.
Well, I know.
No, the bullpen's horrible.
It's not, but I don't think it's. They at least have some guys back.
Yeah,
there.
The bullpen is not horrible compared to last year, but the bullpen doesn't have anybody whom I just trust. You know what I mean? They'll get the job done many nights, but there's nobody that comes in. If you have a one-run lead, say the seventh inning on, I never have trust that, like, oh, they'll hold this. That's not a problem.
Yeah, and that's the way it feels like it's been since 08, is that they never have reliable guys back there. Like, Brogdon, I think, is still good. He had the one blow-up that was bad, but overall, I mean, he hit 99 the other night, which I didn't...
Stop looking at speed guns, for God's sakes.
I can't.
Here's our first generational argument of the day.
Okay.
And there will be more. look with your eyes. Don't look at the speed gun, okay? Don't look at the launch angle. Don't look at the exit philosophy. Look at your eyes, what you see. I think Connor Brogdon has the opportunity to be a pretty good pitcher. He also throws a lot of dumb pitches. I don't care if he throws 99. I just want him to get outs.
Well, he does have a good changeup to go off at 99, so, okay. You know. Okay. I don't want to pick on JT here, but I do think a lot of the problems came back to JT with some of his outings. But the harder you throw, the harder it is to hit.
Oh, all right, one more quick thing then. Okay. And then when I see we got a couple of people on hold, I want to get to them. 215-592-9494. I was never a believer in Andrew Knapp, and I've come around on that because last year he was good, and this year he's very good. And listen, JT's got a reputation as one of the premier defensive catchers in baseball, mm-hmm. as well as offensive catcher.
Best catcher in baseball.
Yeah. Is he inferior defensively to Knapp?
Yes. Yes, he is. And JT is a good blocker of the baseball, good receiver. Like he steals strikes for guys, which you like to see. He's obviously great at, you know, throwing guys out at second base. I have no idea why he throw on JT. But I mean, the numbers speak for itself. Andrew Knapp calls a better game. I've always thought he calls a better game. I think JT, I don't know why he calls a game differently than Andrew Knapp. I would think that the coaches would get there. But Andrew Knapp's ERA with these pitchers is in the high twos, which is good. I mean, he catches enough that we can
see, really good.
We can see the difference. And the league average is like 3.9 or whatever, or 3. Whatever. But Andrew Knapp is below the MLB league average with these guys. JT is in the 4.6s. I mean, there has to be something there that
cause and effect.
Yeah, I go back to the Neris outing last Saturday night in Atlanta. Mm-hmm. Like, why are you throwing a fastball to Freddie Freeman, JT?
Yeah,
to Pablo Sandoval.
Yeah,
that guy's looking for one pitch. He's looking for a fastball that he can hit 450 feet. And guess what? He got it. Like the throw was splintered out of the zone. Yeah, I think Nappy just calls it. Sorry to call him Nappy. I feel like we're back in the Gabe Kapler era, but I genuinely feel like he calls a better game, sticks with guys' fastballs, and JT kind of likes to get too cute sometimes.
Yeah, that's an interesting. I mean, that's an important thing that we don't talk about. I'm glad you brought it up. All right, let's grab a call or two if I can get my mouse working. There we go. Let's get to Bob in Barnegat. Good morning, Bob.
Hey, what's up, guys? How are you?
What's up, Bob?
Oh, my God. Last night game, frustrating. I mean, it just looked like they didn't even want to be there. They looked like a Little League team that, like, stayed up too late the night before playing Call of Duty and came out just to sleep. It was horrible.
It was horrible. You know? It was horrible offensively. It was horrible defensively. The pitching wasn't very good. It picked up. But, it was a painful game to watch.
Aaron Nola, I mean, one thing I've always liked about him is that no matter what's going wrong around him, his facial expressions don't change. He never gets flustered. And last night, like, if you looked at his face, I mean, you could see he was a little frustrated with the strike zone. And going back to talking about Knapp doing a little better than Realmuto, one thing he does do is he frames up pitches better. I feel like Realmuto, there's, like, a lot of pitches on the black, especially at the knees, that you can see they cross in the strike zone. He snatches them up and throws them back to the pitcher instead of giving that umpire a good look at it. That's one thing that he does.
Jack, I'll let you comment on that.
Yeah, it happens like when, you know, he's calling for a fastball in and it'll end up being outside. Like he'll kind of just let it go out of the zone where if he kind of stuck it, it would probably be called for a strike. And with the automated strike zone probably coming, it would be a strike. But yeah, I've always liked the way that Knapp has called games. And I just think that, you know, JT didn't start catching until the minor leagues. So I do think there is a part of that where he hasn't really done it his whole life. He's semi-new to it. Works really hard. I'll give him that. But I just think that the numbers speak for themselves when it comes to pitching to Knapp. There's a reason why Eflin always wants to throw to Knapp. And it's something that I think he needs to work on.
Never thought I'd be an Andrew Knapp fan.
I know. Well, he can't hit. I mean, he straight up can't hit. But listen, he's a backup catcher. This is what you want. A guy that can call a good game, play good defense, and he works a good at bat most nights.
Yeah. Let's sneak in one more here. Carl in Bucks County. You're on with Glenn and Jack Fitz. Hey.
Good morning, guys. How you doing?
What's up, Carl?
My problem with the Phillies is I think there's a systemic problem. When's the last time they brought up a stud in the minor leagues that hit the ground running and stayed running?
Yep.
This kid there, this kid that plays first base, I'm bad on names. But he was
Hoskins.
All that a year and a half ago. This guy, he comes across, I know that you pointed out, he hits a double. But these guys are just strikeout machines. There's something lacking here. You know, they touted this team this year as the 27 Yankees. They're more like the 72 Phillies. They're just a polar opposite. There's no leader on that team. I like Bryce Harper. He's done nothing wrong. But his paycheck dictates that they refer to him as leader of the team.
Yeah, I don't buy the there's no – I don't know what you're looking for. Like, what are you hoping to see leader-wise?
All right. When Diaz was catching, Diaz called the infield in. He talked – how the heck did they have that drop, pop, fly? They don't know who's supposed to catch the ball. The collision in right field and the center fielder over a pop-up. There's something
that was terrible, but I don't see how that's Bryce Harper's fault, particularly since he wasn't in the game.
No, it's not Bryce Harper's fault. I'm saying there's no Boa on that team in the infield. There's nobody driving them.
Yeah, I get that. I understand your point. I think leadership in baseball can be overrated. I think it's a tough thing to put your finger on.
Yeah.
But I'll go back to his first point and agree with his first point. This is not a team like the great team they had from 07 to 11 that was built through its farm system. This
right.
is a team where, you know, the top players being Realmuto and Harper are both guys they signed as free agents. Wheeler is a guy who they brought in as a free agent. So who's home raised? Nola, Eflin,
well, even Eflin
Hoskins.
Even Eflin was in a trade.
Oh, that's right. Eflin was in the – which was he?
He was in the Rollins deal. They got him
the
from Rollins.
The Rollins deal.
Herrera's brought in from the outside. McCutcheon brought in from the outside. And I brought this up last week. Like, everyone talks about why they're so bad on the road or whatever. They have all these road struggles because they don't know how to win together. Like, it's just hard when you have all these collective parts try to come together and create a new culture. Like, it's basically Bryce and JT trying to create a new culture with guys that they haven't grown up playing
that's
with.
That's a great point. Boy, that's a great point. And when you look at the team that won earlier in the, you know, the 07-11, and you look, he made reference back to the teams in the 80s, those guys all played together in the minor leagues, all knew each other when they were 19 years old, all got called up together, all played with each other for years. And he's right and you're right. That is a huge advantage. 215-592-9494. We'll keep talking about the Phillies. I do want to, in the next segment, get into the Basketball Hall of Fame inductions last night. Kobe Bryant, his wife gave just a marvelous speech. Play a little bit of that. And we'll take your calls. Jack Fritz is in for Ray Dinger. You're not going to notice the difference. I'm Glenn Mack now on Sunday morning on 94 WIP. Sunday morning on 94 WIP, my pal Ray Dinger, a little bit under the weather. People are asking me, like, oh, is he... Ray's had his vaccines. It's not COVID. Ray's got tummy issues, which he wrote me this morning, are clearing up. He's feeling a little bit better. Should be good in a couple days. Jack Fritz, one of my favorite people at the station, filling in for Ray. Let's talk to Mark in Woodbury Heights. Good morning, Mark.
Good morning, guys. Is this team talented? I think they have a few talented players. Jack, I do agree with what you just said a couple minutes ago. When you put pieces together to try to make a team, it really doesn't work well. It doesn't mesh well. And this, what you're seeing now is years of neglect of this farm system. Terrible drafting. The destruction of what Matt Klentak did over a 4 or 5 year period.
Mm-hmm.
And now you're trying to buy a team. You're trying to, it doesn't work that way. It just doesn't. This is, and it's so true. They don't play as a team really. It's, let's try to hit a home run. I think the pitching this year has been decent, believe it or not. It's been decent. Offensively, they're just, it's abysmal watching them offensively.
And your initial point of what the drafting has been being the problem is so spot on. Mickey Moniak is still only 23, so there's still that chance. But every time we've seen him, he just looks like a kid they called up from Babe Ruth League. Way out of his depth.
What about Haseley? Where's Adam Haseley?
He's back. Yeah, he's back now. And, Jack, we never really heard what the story is. It's a personal thing, so I don't know.
Yeah,
I
mean,
I don't know.
He was the seventh pick in the draft?
Yeah, he's the eighth pick in the draft. Yeah.
Right, so you don't.
Amazing.
So now we don't know we can count on him for anything. And then I'll let you finish your call. Then I want to ask Jack a little bit about Kingery. But those are three guys whom you thought could be kind of something you build around, and all three of them have just been abject failures.
Yeah, I mean, you gave Kingery all that money even before he really even stepped onto a major league field. Just the mistakes, it's just unbelievable. And at the end of the day, it comes down to Middleton. He's the guy who put these people in place, and they have destroyed this team.
To his credit, he got rid of them. But yes, you're right. He is responsible for what had happened. Jack, what do you make of Kingery now? He's back with the team on the bench, not playing.
Well, he's not playing against lefties either, Glenn. I mean, if he's gonna, on Friday night, the pitcher that they faced, Matz, Scott Kingery is like a career, you know, .400 hitter against even Matz. Like he's in his career has owned him, and he couldn't get in the lineup. And it's like he's one of the worst players I've ever seen, and I can't believe that he's one of the worst players I've ever seen, and I can't believe that we're there with him. Because, I mean, you remember just as well as I did, this guy coming up, it was like we felt like we had hope around him.
The excitement of him when he had that amazing spring trainer, that they can't send him down.
Yeah.
And they said, I will keep him, and they did. They gave him a multi-year contract, which is not unique in baseball with young players these days. They want to get some control and manage what the salary's going to be, but they gave him a lot of money. He was pretty good. He was okay in 2019. As I recall, his numbers were not special, but they were fine. And then, you know, I have heard callers to this station mention that he had COVID last year and maybe never really came back from that. There are people who have impact of COVID that lasts for a long time. The Phillies have never said that. He's never said that. No. But I don't know how to put my finger on it.
Well,
that he goes from an OPS of 788 in 2019, which is fine. It's not great, but it's okay. It's good. To 5.11 last year to being 1-16 this year.
I can't believe he even has one hit. I don't know if I remember that. But yeah, well, Freddie Freeman also had COVID last year, and he went out and won NL MVP. So,
I know.
So
hey, the people respond differently.
I know.
I don't know what it is with him.
Honestly, with Kingery and this, it's out there. He had this hitting coach, and people blame the Phillies for Kingery, and I actually don't. I don't think it's the Phillies. He had this hitting coach from Arizona who he was a private guy. He got him through the minor leagues, and he kept going to him, and the Phillies were like, please stop. And he kept going to him, really believed in it, got into the launch angle stuff. And I'm not anti-launch angle, but he is not a guy that should be worried about hitting the ball out of the ballpark. He's a line drive, gap-to-gap guy. And now every time I watch him, it just looks like he's going up to the plate thinking, I have no shot. And I can't believe we're there with Scott Kingery because, you know, when he was coming up, I was like, oh, great. We got our next Utley or whatever. And
right.
Then
that's exactly who he was compared to.
And remember the one scout said he's Dustin Pedroia with more talent? So, listen, it's been an abject failure. I thought the contract was smart because, you know, of the control and whatnot. But maybe that got in his head and he's been trying to live up to it since. But he's legitimately one of the worst players I've ever seen in my life.
He's an incredible bust. I'm going to digress for just a second. Hang in if you're on the lines. We will get to you. But last night was the 2020, was last year's, not this year's, but last year's Namath Memorial Basketball Hall of Fame class, because they did not last year get to do the induction, of course. And so they had it last night. Kevin Garnett, Tim Duncan, Eddie Sutton, the coach, Rudy Tomjanovich, Taika Catchings, the great women's player. But, of course, the big name being Kobe Bryant. And I think everybody wanted to watch. His wife gave the speech, and she was accompanied by Michael Jordan next to her. And she focused on his career. She focused on their relationship, focused on his determination, how he would play through injuries, played right after he tore his Achilles tendon. And I want to play just, I guess, the end of her speech, because I got to tell you, I was verklempt. Go ahead, let's play this.
You did it. You're in the Hall of Fame now. You're a true champ. You're not just an MVP. You're an all-time great. I'm so proud of you. I love you forever and always. Kobe Bean Bryant.
There was not a dry eye in the room, Jack.
No. No, and you know, we kind of just saw this, unfortunately, with Brandi Halliday as well, where she had to give the speech mm-hmm. for Roy that Roy obviously worked so hard to deliver. And same thing with Kobe. I mean, Kobe was just unbelievable, you know, the legendary work ethic. And you could tell that getting into the Basketball Hall of Fame would have been something that, you know, he was striving for and whatnot. So the strength of her to be able to do that, and Brandi Halliday, same kind of thing, is just – I could never do it, Glenn. I don't think I could do it. So just another unbelievable night.
Yeah. Today they announced the 2021 class.
Yep.
Former Sixer star Chris Webber.
Yeah. It's so funny. It's so funny. I remember exactly where I was when they got Chris Webber. I actually think I was listening to WIP. I was like,
I was probably on.
You probably were. I was in fourth grade. Sorry. But
so I've been doing it for a long time. Yeah.
And I remember they got Chris Webber, and I was so excited. Like, I love C Web. He got here, and he was so beyond cooked. It wasn't even funny.
He was just terrible. I think it's supposed to be Chris Webber. Ben Wallace is going to get in. I loved watching Ben Wallace, man. He was just like, big, strong monster of a guy.
Yeah, but I mean, he's not a Hall of Famer. Like, the Basketball Hall of Fame is such a joke. Like Kobe should obviously be in, Garnett should be in, Duncan should be in. Ben Wallace is what, a 2-time Defensive Player of the Year?
Two-time Defensive Player of the Year. That gets you in. Listen, I think Halls of Fame are diluted in every sport. Okay, so I'll agree with your general premise. I mean, Baseball Hall of Fame is the one year after year. It's like, how does this guy get in? He was a good player. I thought Ben Wallace was a great player. Maybe I just like watching him so much.
Well, listen, he was obviously the centerpiece in that championship team, that Pistons team, so I guess that helps. But like,
yeah.
the thing that's going to drive me crazy is when Iguodala gets in. I mean, and, like he's going to get in the Hall of Fame. Everyone gets in the Hall of Fame. I think Ben Wallace is not a Hall of Famer. I'm sorry.
I'm good with Ben Wallace. You okay with Paul Pierce?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. Jackie. I'm good with Paul Pierce. I mean, he's he's an interesting cat, but I'm good with Paul Pierce.
You remember when the Sixers chose not to draft him?
I don't remember, but I've heard the story. Thank God they promised Larry Hughes they were going to draft him.
Exactly. And it's true.
Just it's a dime. Yeah, Larry Brown said it. I mean, he's literally admitted that we promised Larry Brown we'd draft him.
I had second thoughts, you know, maybe we should take Paul Pierce. But, hey, I'd kind of made this promise to the guy, you know, so I thought I had to. Yeah. Oh, it was horrible.
Well, I mean.
And we knew it was horrible at the time. There's some that you look back later, right? And you say, you know, why didn't they do this? But that one, it's like at the moment, everybody thought, what are you doing?
Yeah, well.
That was also, I'm sorry to interrupt you. That was the year Dirk Nowitzki came up. And nobody here thought like, oh, they got to get Dirk Nowitzki because he was, you know, nobody knew what he was. But Paul Pierce, yeah, people knew what that was going to be.
Yeah, and I think that we all remember the bad drafts. But, you know, sometimes you talk yourselves into the players a little bit. For me, that was the Marcus Smith draft, where I was like, the announcers during the draft didn't even know who he was.
Yeah.
They were like, he's the third, fourth round guy. And the Eagles
were
like,
they're scrambling through their notes, like, hey, can you give me the third day, guys?
Yeah. I would say Larry Hughes, Marcus Smith, Danny Watkins, the three that jump out of, like, bad in the moment, ended up being just as bad.
Those would be good. The Eagles drafted a defensive end named Harris back 1 year from Virginia. Was it Al Harris? Was that his
John,
first name?
John, was it John Harris?
John Harris. That's it. Yeah. Who, like, nobody had. He, when they interviewed him afterward, he said, I didn't think I was going to go till the third. And the Eagles took him in the first. He was one. And the other one that everybody remembers, and he's not as bad as these guys, but in terms of what it meant, was Mike Mamula, when the Eagles had like the 7th, 8th pick of the draft, something along those ways, and Warren Sapp was coming out, and everybody in Philadelphia wanted the Eagles to get Warren Sapp. You knew him. You'd seen him in the bowl games. You'd watched him through college. He's going to be great. And they traded down. And Tampa takes Warren Sapp with the Eagles pick, and the Eagles take Mamula, who was like a combine phenom.
Yeah.
And that was a bad one.
That was the first time analytics ruined sports is the Mike Mamula draft.
We should get him for Tell Us Your Story.
Yeah, he should.
He'd be good. All right, let's get Zach in media up here. Hey, Zach.
Hey, guys. How's it going?
All right.
What's up, Zach?
Hey, real quick, just make my couple points, and I'll hang up, let you guys talk. So The analytics, I think analytics are good to a certain point. I think this whole launch angle, exit velo, how hard a pitcher throws, I think that's all unnecessary. Like, it doesn't matter how hard somebody throws a fastball. If you can't locate it, it's no good. I mean, Big Maddox is a Hall of Famer. He barely threw 90 miles per hour. And this whole thing with launch angle, like, I coach Little League and I see it. And in the future of baseball, it's not looking good. This is like the past 10 years. It's either they want to hit home runs or they're going to strike out. It's almost like singles. They don't want singles anymore. And what they're teaching them is that. And I totally disagree with that.
Like, Jack, I think he's coming at you here. He's coming right at you there, Jack Fritz.
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, listen, for every Greg Maddux, there's 1,000 guys that throw 89 and aren't very good. So, listen, the harder you throw, the more outs you're going to get. It's as simple as that. And, listen, the only thing behind launch angle is they just want to hit under the ball so it gets in the gaps and sometimes it's home runs. Do I think it's gotten out of control? Yes, I do think it's gotten out of control. But overall,
yeah. I mean, like,
yeah.
Like, honestly, I forget who said it one time, but I remember reading the quote. This is pretty much most home runs are just fly balls that go past the fence. I mean, sometimes they're not even hard as hit as a single. And it's a better hit sometimes, better contact with the ball.
Zach, we feel your frustration.
Yeah.
This is my only problem with it. And I think analytics works. I think teams do it because they find it's more successful. But you also have the dilemma that it's making the game less interesting.
Yep.
And that's where they're going to have to reconcile it.
Yeah.
I understand throwing 98 miles an hour is better than throwing 91 miles an hour. That's kind of simple. I understand a home run is better than three singles. But the game is – and I don't want to get into this. I mean, every show has done this, but just real quickly. The game is not interesting to watch, and that's the problem.
I am very pro this stuff, but I also played the game, so I also appreciate the sport of baseball. And I'm with you. They need to get back to – and the only way I think to do it, Glenn, and I know you don't want to totally get into it, but I would love if they moved the fences back and just – and I know that would take away the home runs, but you know what it would eventually do? It would get balls in the gap, it would get more stolen bases, and we could get more excitement in the game. Because you've been at plenty of baseball games, I've been at plenty of baseball games. The most exciting plays are doubles and triples because you can see that – you can feel the rise of the crowd, and you can you can see that coming. And sure, home runs are great. But my point with the home runs during the regular season is that they're great during the regular season, but how does it translate to postseason baseball? And postseason baseball is a different animal. You can't rely on home runs all the time.
Nicely said. That's Jack Fritz. He's filling in for an ailing Ray Dinger today. Just to make people know, Ray's he's actually getting better. I got an email from a little while ago. He's starting to feel better. He's going to be fine. He'll be back this week. 215-592-9494. Hey, Jack, how about we talk beer in the next segment?
Oh, listen, love a good beer.
Something you and I do have in common.
Yeah.
Morning, we are going to take you to Phillies baseball. Leading off starts around noon. Big Daddy Graham is going to join us in the 11 o'clock hour, as always, with a fun list. Ray's off today. Jack Fritz is in for Ray. And, Jack, one thing you and I have in common is we're both beer guys. I am part owner of the Conshock and Brewing Company. I've been a good beer drinker for a long time. I have a
great
TV
one
show.
Of the best beer drinkers.
Thank you. I have a TV show called What's Brewing on NBC Sports Philadelphia with Joe Sixpack, so I talk beer. And I know your family started a brewery last year or two.
Yeah, it's Four Fingers Brewing Company out in Aston, PA, right down the road from Newman University. So we're both in the beer business. Also, big beer guys.
So you brought up an interesting topic, which is actually something that we did on our TV show about a year or two ago, and it's always a good one. We'll throw out our thoughts. We'll get Moshe Kravitz to weigh in. Well, if you want,
Moshe, is Moshe really a beer drinker? I mean,
he says he is.
I am not a. Yeah. I don't have a connection to a brewery. I can't tell you about different hops and stuff, but I consistently go out of my way to try new beers as opposed to repeating things just because I like them.
All right. Yeah, I'm not going to get snooty on it. I mean,
I might.
Yeah, I'm a beer guy, but I can't stand the pretentious beer guys.
Oh, listen, I am so with you there. It's like, you know, now there's the attack on hazies. Like, come on, hazy IPAs are great. We all like hazies. You know?
Those are the best. But anyway, the thing we just wanted to throw out here today, and I think this stems from you and your wife recently bought a house. Congratulations.
Thank you.
And you're discovering that owning a house is a lot of work.
I mean, it's every day, Glenn. Like, I didn't,
yes, I'm aware of that. Welcome to my world, yes.
I didn't think it was going to be every day that I have to do something else. I thought I'd be like, I'll move in, everything's settled. No, it's legitimately, we got to do something every day.
I just mowed that lawn last week.
That's what I'm saying. It keeps coming back, too.
Yeah. Anyway, so that gave you kind of the thought of, when's the best beer? Not what is the best beer. We're not talking hazy IPAs versus stouts versus anything. We're talking what's the time when you just enjoy a beer the most. So you go.
Yeah, so we were obviously doing yard work yesterday. I took out a sidewalk that was in our backyard. So like I was out there with the sledgehammer. Very strong.
Wow.
Very strong stuff.
Oh, that's real work.
Yeah, per usual. Just doing guy stuff. But I am
pounding a jackhammer.
That's right. But I'm slowly starting to really appreciate the post yard work beer. You know, you're exhausted. You're out there. It's usually hot. You're sweating, and just getting out there and having a nice cold one after the yard work is as quickly emerged as my single favorite beer.
That's a great beer. I'll give you. Here's my favorite beer.
All right.
It's a summer. It's in the summer, right? You go to the beach. You get off the beach. You're all sticky. With the place, our place happens to have a outdoor shower right in the back.
Right.
So it's just kind of like a box with a shower in it. You come off the beach. You still got all the sand all over you. You stand in the shower. You take a cold beer. I would recommend cans, not bottles.
Oh yeah, for sure.
Put it against your forehead for a minute just to let your body cool. And then the shower beer, the post-beach beer in the shower is the greatest beer there is.
Yeah, this is getting deep. I agree. It's funny because shower beers used to be a thing in college where, like, you know, it's after class and you're getting ready for the weekend, but you don't have time. Like, you want to shower, also
and
have
a beer.
So you bring the beer into the shower. I thought when you brought out the shower beer, I thought you're going that direction back to the old BU days. But
yeah, no, I've done that too. They actually, do you know they now actually sell like a thing that you can hang on the wall of your shower to hold a can of beer?
Well, it's about time. I mean, it's all about efficiency these
sure.
days. But yeah, the post beach beer, even the beer on the beach is another great one.
Oh, the beer on the beach is good, or the swimming pool beer is great.
That's right.
Yeah, all those. Mosh, you wanna get one?
Yeah. Well, we just ended a chapter with the end of the Flyers season of a great time to drink a beer, which is the three Philly sports games on at once beer. When you just, you know, you got nothing else going on, you were working all day, and you can turn on Phillies, Sixers, and Flyers. We still have Phillies and Sixers going for the next, hopefully,
the Flyers,
two
you
months.
Need the beer just to numb yourself. That's
yes, right. Exactly. Like, it wasn't always an enjoyable game, especially with the Flyers and Phillies of recent days, but when there's multiple sports on at once to watch, it's a great time to drink a beer.
The remote's in one hand and the can of beer is in the other hand.
I am a Philly guy, Jack. Yeah. Unlike you, I am a Philly guy.
Yeah, I mean, seriously, why don't you just work all three teams into your beer? I appreciate
I like
that. Yeah.
I like it. I like, again, the remote in one hand, the can of beer in the other.
Absolutely.
It's pretty good. Right, I'm just throwing in one more, and people can weigh in. I don't want us to steal them all, but the grilling beer.
Mm.
So you're out there, right? You got the pinchers in one hand, the beer in the other, and it's convenient if you get little flare-ups.
Yeah, I guess that would be a good thing to have. I just got my grill in last week, so another part of the house. I have no idea how to use it. So once I get to the grilling stage, I will share in your grill beers.
Oh yeah.
And then you've got one beer for while you're grilling and then a second beer for while you're eating what you just grilled.
Sure. And by the way, I owe you a housewarming gift. I may try to get you what I use, which is the beer can chicken beer holder, so that you can make beer can chicken,
which is
another great beer.
That sounds awesome.
It's phenomenal. All right, let's. We could probably do this all day, but let's see what the people want to talk about. Charlie's got a point on the Phils. Hey, Charlie.
Hey guys, love the show. Thanks for having me on.
Thanks, Charlie.
And Jack, I really value all your Phillies opinions and input. I just wanted to say thanks for all that.
Oh, I appreciate it.
So I think the past week has actually told us a lot about this 2021 team. I was really hoping for a bounce-back win after last Saturday's heartbreaking loss. I still can't get over that. And unfortunately, they came out flatless. And during the week with Washington, I liked their clutch offense. I thought one of the games they were 7-for-14, runners in scoring position. So I thought I would see, you know, an improvement with, you know, clutch hitting, singles, down the gaps.
Seven's usually as many clutch hits as they get men in scoring position in a month. You're right.
Yeah. So I liked the way they play the Nationals. I mean, I know the Nationals are a struggling team. They're not the same team as they were a few years ago. And even though that they won Friday, I don't understand the inconsistency of this team and in offense. It's something we see in the past 3-4 years, regardless of who the manager is, regardless of the lineup. And I would say today is as much of a win as possible for May. I look at the division, and I do think it's weak. I don't think the Mets are a really competitive team either. I do think it's still the Braves' division to win. But I wanted to get your thoughts. Like, what do you think this team is? Are they a 500 team? Because that's what I believe they are. And would you think today is a must win?
No, there's no must win in May. I'll let Jack answer the other question, but there's no must win. And it's a 162-game schedule. I've seen teams lose 8 in a row and make the playoffs, so I'm not going to say that. Are they a 500 team, Jack Fritz, or are they better than that?
I think they're like a couple games better than 500, but we're seeing it already this year. They're never consistent. It's either the pitching staff's great, offense bad. Offense good, pitching staff bad. There's no consistency there. So I think they're, you know, maybe an 84, 85 win ball game max, but ultimately every night the defense is going to let them down. And like Glenn mentioned earlier, there's no one in the back of the bullpen that you're like, oh, great, game's over, lockdown, awesome. They're good pitchers that have stuff, but you can't consistently rely on them on a night-in, night-out basis. And, you know, until they – like, the defense is something that I'm surprised they're as bad as they are. Like, I thought Bohm was going to be bad, but I thought Didi was good last year. Segura's good. You know, Hoskins has taken a huge step back this year at first base. McCutchen can't move anymore. And it's something that isn't going to get better. Like, there's some parts
– And center field is real spotty, too.
Yeah, I mean, Herrera's, I think, has done a decent job out there.
Yeah, but it's an adventure, man.
Exactly.
A tough fly ball gets out there. His tracking fly balls has never been good.
No, not even on the Hamels no-hitter. Right.
last play.
Yeah. Yeah, so it's just like, you know, you try to – when you're looking at a baseball team, you're trying to evaluate what can I rely on most nights. You can't rely on the offense, which is unbelievable given the talent they have. You definitely can't rely on the defense. You can rely on three members of the rotation, and you can rely on maybe two guys in the bullpen, and that's it. So it's just hard to project them going forward.
Yeah, nicely said. 215-592-9494. Jack Fritz is in for A. Actually, coming up in the next segment, Jack, you are going to turn the tables on something that
yeah,
I do with Ray.
That's right, because I listen every weekend, and I love listening to you guys on the weekend. And it's the Dittinger Chronicles, I think, are great, but you know, we're the MacDow Chronicles. You're also an elder statesman, and you wrote in the newspapers for a long time. You've been around Philly sports for a while. I'm going to do the MacDow Chronicles.
Okay, we'll see how that plays out.
Yeah,
he's Jack Fritz. I'm Glenn MacDow on 94 WIP. So Ray Dinger's got a new book out called "Finished Business: My 50 Years." Hold on, I got to get the rest of the full name of the thing, which is, by the way, terrific. And I'm reading my 50 years of headlines, heroes, and heartaches, which covers Ray's career. And as part of that, we've been doing kind of a weekly segment where we kind of go through different aspects of Ray's life and his career, from when he was a kid learning sports on the bar stool at his grandfather's bar to all of the amazing stories he's covered. So, Jack, you said today, I got news. Mine's not half that interesting, but
well,
I've been around, and you said you kind of wanted to delve into it.
Well, yeah, because, you know, yeah, that's after this week in baseball, Ben. That means that's when you know it's serious around these parts.
Yeah.
Yeah, because like I genuinely like listening to not calling you old, but older people talk about sports.
We're old, that's okay.
Like I like talking
I'm
about,
not embarrassed to be my age.
It's
that's
more
cool.
I just find it more interesting.
I've been working in media since 1976.
Man, that is a really I've been
yep.
working in media since 2017. But here we are. So the first thing I wanted to ask you is, what was the most famous person you have met covering games?
Well, I'm going to take it out of sports because before I was a you probably don't know this. Before I was on WIP, I was a sports writer. Before I was a sports writer, I was a political writer.
Huh.
When I was 25 years old, I got to cover the presidential campaign working at a newspaper in Florida, which was pretty exciting when I was 25 years old. And I got an interview with Ronald Reagan, who was running for president. I've met 5 presidents. The interesting thing is I met 5 presidents, and I met none of them actually when he was president.
Gotcha.
I met Trump. I met Gerald Ford. I met Clinton. I'm actually 6. I met both Bushes. I interviewed George Bush II when he owned the Texas Rangers. And I met Ronald Reagan, and I interviewed Ronald Reagan. And here's the story. At the time he was running, he was the oldest man ever to run for president. And so I asked him other questions, but I said, what do you say to people who suggest you're too old to be running for president? And he said to me, it's only impudent young men like you who ask that question. So I got told off by Ronald Reagan.
Nice.
Yeah, that was fun.
Was that the only one that you've done a one-on-one like interview with?
I did a one-on-one with Trump.
Uh-oh.
When I covered the USFL versus NFL trial. Again, this is all before your life, but yeah. You remember there was a USFL and it fell apart and it sued the NFL and Trump was part of this whole thing. And I interviewed him for that. And so the Bush one, actually the George Bush, older Bush, was kind of a one-on-one, but it was just like three or four questions when he was touring a plant in Detroit, when I worked in Detroit. So there you go.
Interesting. I mean, he could have bought your Bills, by the way, back in the day. That would have been interesting.
Yeah, he wanted to move him to Toronto.
Oh, wow, really?
Yes. That was not popular.
Well, that would have been heartbreaking for you. Weirdest thing that has ever happened to you covering a story?
I'm going to stay in politics, actually. So, and again, I know these guys are before your time, but you know who Bob Dole is?
Yes.
Okay. So Bob Dole was, he was a great man. And Bob Dole also is a man who was injured during World War II. And he lost most of the use of his right hand. And I was interviewing Bob Dole. This was, again, still when I was down in Florida. And he was going to make a speech at a hotel. And they said, go up to his hotel room. You can talk to him for like 20 minutes before he goes down and gives a speech. And his wife was there. His wife was a very accomplished woman as well. But she left. And he was there. And he was putting on his shirt. Again, you know, kind of odd. I'm talking to this guy as he's getting dressed. But yeah. He's putting on his shirt. And because he had lost use of his hand, he had a device. It was like a hook on a stick that he used to kind of hook the button to button the buttons, because you need two hands to button a shirt. So he had this device, and the device broke. And so he's standing there as I'm talking to him, and he's got this thing, and he can't button his shirt. And he said, I got to ask you a favor. Could you button my shirt? So I buttoned his shirt before he went down and gave the speech.
Did he deliver a good speech, or did he throw him off?
He was good. Yeah, I liked him. He was a very smart guy.
That's definitely an interesting one. Yeah. What's the most fun you've had on assignment?
When I went to Dominican. So
what was that for?
I convinced the news. This is when newspapers had money, and I convinced this is I before I came to Philadelphia. I worked for the Detroit Free Press. And I convinced them to send me down to the Dominican for a week to write a whole bunch of stories on winter baseball. There was a pitcher on the Tigers at the time, a guy named Milt Wilcox, good veteran pitcher, who had blown out his arm and was trying to come back. He went down. He actually went down there and he like adopted a street kid. He was a great guy. I was down there in a locker room. There was a pitcher named Cecilio Guante, pitched for the Pirates, who got upset that he got torched in the game, and he took a hunting knife and threw it across the locker room, hit the wall. We got held up by cops on the way to Santiago, who wanted us to give him a bribe to let us go through. Here's the story I'll give. And it was an amazing thing because it was so loose down there. Like, I'm covering a game. You remember Howard Johnson?
I heard the name, yeah.
Yeah, okay. He was a really good third baseman for the Tigers and the Mets. And he said, yeah, come sit in the dugout during the game. And it's like, okay. I went to Joaquin Andujar's house. It was very cool. But this was the most interesting part of it. The Blue Jays had a facility in the woods where they kind of stashed young players so that other teams wouldn't scout them to draft them. It was a very controversial thing. It was actually run by a guy named Mario Mendoza, who is famous for?
I don't know.
The Mendoza.
Oh, the Mendoza.
He's the guy they named that after. But anyway, so we go. It's me and there was another guy from the Washington Post. We were covering this, you know, writing the same story.
Right.
And when we finish up, we got to drive back into town, which is like 45 minutes. Again, they had hid this thing out in the woods, and there's all these 16, 17-year-old kids, great players, like guys who became major leaguers. I remember they said, watch this Sil Campisano. He's going to become the next Clemente. He played for the Phillies. He stunk. But they said when we're coming back, they said, listen, there's these two kids. They need a ride back into town. Can you give them a ride? And so we did. One of them was a kid named Francisco Cabrera. He later played for the Blue Jays and the Braves. He actually I think he drove home the winning run. You ever see the play where Sid Bream, slowest guy in baseball, scored to win the pennant?
Yes.
Okay. He hit the ball.
Huh.
Anyway, Francisco Cabrera that day had gotten his assignment from the Blue Jays. And he can hardly speak English. He doesn't really know what's what. And so he shows me this, and he says, tell me what this means. And I said, well, it looks like you're going to play in Fort Erie, Ontario, which was a farm team of the Blue Jays. He goes, Fort Erie, Ontario. He says, is that cold? Because last year I played in Bradenton, Florida, and that was really cold.
I guess he was in for a rude awakening.
I couldn't break his heart.
I mean,
I couldn't tell him. I said, like, it's about the same.
Yeah, it's about the same as Florida and Ontario.
Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah.
Most mad, have you ever gotten, you know, close to an altercation with a subject?
I once had a Teamster punch me in the face. I was covering a strike, and a Teamster didn't like what I read, and he punched me in the face.
What's a Teamster?
A Teamster is a truck driver.
Ah.
They were striking, and I was covering the strike and writing about it, and it was actually a newspaper strike, and he got mad, and he slugged me. Mickey Moore, you know who got the maddest at me? And I think I can tell this story now. The nicest guy you ever met is Mickey Morandini. He's the greatest guy in the world,
yeah,
right?
He is.
93, when the Phillies had that great season, and I wrote for the Inquirer, they decided, like, let's put more guys on the beat. And so they had me take a road trip down to Atlanta and write some stuff about it. And Morandini had a really good rookie back then, but he was going through a slump. And I talked to him, and I put a line in a story that said something like, to try to break the slump, Morandini went out late with the boys one night, which I didn't mean to have the implication that I think everybody took out of it.
Right.
But I think everybody took an implication out of it, including Morandini's wife, who called him up. And so the next day when I went in the locker room, he was furious at me. And again, he's the nicest guy there ever was, and I think he came real close to slugging me.
Well, honestly, I think he kind of had a point.
You know? Oh, no, I was guilty. I didn't mean to, and I didn't mean to imply what I did, but I think I kind of violated it.
Yeah, yeah. And last one here, got to ask this to all the old beat writers. Best game you ever covered?
All right, not Philly.
Not okay. Philly, because obviously, okay. Yes, we've all been there.
I'll give you two. The Bloody Sock game.
Wow.
Yeah, that was pretty amazing. And the other one was the greatest comeback in NFL history, at least it was at the time, the Bills against the Houston Oilers.
Well, I'm sure you weren't rooting for a team during that.
I was in the press box, so I certainly couldn't root out loud. But here's the great part of that. So the Oilers are up at the end of the first half. It was 35-3 or whatever. And there was the guy who was the Oilers' traveling secretary who was sitting directly behind all the reporters in the press box. And he picks up the phone and as loud as he could says, yes, this is the Houston Oilers calling. We would like to book a charter to Kansas City next week when we play the Chiefs. And just made a huge show of like, ha, 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 ha.
Right.
As the game went on, he got really quiet. And right at the end of the game, he picks up the phone and he calls the charter. And he's like, yeah, this is Lance from the Oilers. Can we cancel that plane? But that was an amazing thing, and I got to talk to Frank Reich after, in a scrum. It wasn't just me. But that was the first time I ever met Frank Reich, and I thought, this guy's great. He should coach someday.
Wow. I mean, some say he's the only reason the Eagles won the Super Bowl in 2017. So
yeah, well.
You were the first one to know?
He was pretty good.
He was pretty good.
So,
well, that was fun. I liked hearing those stories.
Yeah, good. Thank you for asking. I appreciate it. All right, let's sneak in a few phone calls here. Zach in Winfield Heights is with us. Hello, Zach.
Hello there, another Zach. Here's what I want to talk about. Tuesday night, I'm watching the Phils and the Nationals. Bryce Harper gets the first base. Zimmerman is there. They get into this long conversation. He takes a lead. Pitch is thrown. He goes back. They continue the conversation. So, I mean, they're supposed to be wearing different uniforms, right? Supposed to want to beat the other guy. How do you justify all this fraternization? It's like one big fraternity, and it really bothered me. You know, I mean, it's supposed to be competitors, and here they are yakking it up and having a great time.
Yeah.
You see this a lot, but it was really more pronounced during that.
Yeah, Jack,
what you think about
does
that.
This bother you, Jack?
No, I mean, because obviously, if Bryce was doing this with a different team and not Ryan Zimmerman, like, Ryan Zimmerman is well-regarded as, like, one of the best teammates in baseball. These guys are close friends. They play together for a while. Zimmerman didn't play last year, so he didn't get to talk to him then. And he probably he's talked to him since they won the World Series, but it's like catching up with an old friend, Zach. Did you ever not catch up with old friends?
I think you do that after the game. I don't think you do that during the game. I think it sends the wrong message.
Yeah, but do you think Bryce was like barely able to concentrate because he was talking to Ryan Zimmerman?
I think you do that after the game.
You just think it's against the code that you would have.
I don't mind them shaking hands before the game. I don't mind them. You know, but not during the game when you're a competitor and you're taking a lead. What? You know, it just sends the wrong message.
I hear you. Listen, you're old school, and I get it. I'm not particularly bothered by it, but I understand why somebody would be. There was it Didi goofing around with somebody on second base?
Well, Segura's big with
Segura. Is it Cunha? Who is
it?
Cunha, yeah, that goes a little nuts. But listen, I hear his point. Baseball used to be very strict about that. They would give guys fines for that. Now I think it is all one fraternity.
Yeah, it bothers me. Like, the thing that bothers me is like when the Eagles lose and they're doing it with players after the game. Like, remember the Seattle game from like a couple years ago where like they're all yucking it up after the game. Like, that bothers me when you lose. But like, baseball's such a long season, you know, and you're seeing your friend out there. You like having fun with them, and I don't know. It just doesn't.
Hey, I got mad. I got mad when the Eagles were losing to the Cowboys back in the day, and Mark McMillan helped up Emmitt Smith.
Yeah, that's
and gave him a pat on the back and was like in awe that, oh, I got to play against Emmitt Smith. Yeah, you know what? It bothers me more in football than baseball.
And I agree with you there. Like, baseball doesn't bother me. Like, they're just, I mean, like, first basemen are notorious for having conversations with players, and this happened to be former teammates. So it didn't take away from Bryce's play on the field. With football, it drives me crazy. Like, you're supposed to go out there and you're trying to kill the other guy, and you guys are laughing after the game. So, yeah,
but I'm not going to tell him he's wrong for feeling that, because it's an old school way of doing it, and he's not wrong. He's just never going to get what he wants. Jim in the Northeast, you're on with Jack Fritz and Glenn Mack now. Hi, Jim.
Hi, how are you, gentlemen? I have a little different angle with the Phillies. I want to see what you think of this. You know, first of all, who made the decision to bring in our bullpen people? Because I think you guys said it's not bad, but it's not good, or that it's just, you know. So who made
it? It's better than last year, but still pretty bad.
Better than last year. Okay. So who made the decision to bring back Quinn and Valasquez and go after, the fourth and fifth starters?
Well, that's your GM. That's your GM.
Oh, okay. So he made the lousy decisions, but we don't criticize them like we do the Eagles GMs and everything. And why is it that they get a free pass?
I don't think he gets a free pass. I think that I think that he's still relatively new on the job. So, and he's got Dave Dombrowski has won World Series in the past, so people are inclined to give him a little bit of latitude. And I think that, I guess to your point, there's always going to be more scrutiny of the Eagles in this town because it's first and foremost the football
team. Right. Okay, but let me ask you this. Okay, so do we have better scouts in the minor league system? Because apparently, like, the scout told us that how great that Spencer Howard would be, but he hasn't really proved anything.
Well,
so
hurt.
How can we even trust the scouts?
Well, he's hurt. Scouts can't predict somebody's going to get hurt.
Right. But, okay, so, but the people, when the scouts tell you that how, we don't have a real great prospect, maybe, except for what, disabled kid.
Okay, but
something.
I'll just get back to my original point, and I appreciate your call. The Spencer Howard, or any of the names you mentioned, I believe, Jack, correct me if I'm wrong, were here before Dave Dombrowski was the GM.
Yeah.
They're all from the previous administration. Football, you draft year to year, so you look at this rookie class, what's it going to be? Baseball, I mean, you mentioned Roman Quinn. Well, Roman Quinn's been in this organization for 6-7 years. So that's not on Dave Dombrowski. He's got nothing to do with it. He's got to find guys to replace him.
He was hired in December, and that's already 2 months into free agency and stuff. And also, we have to bring it up, but the luxury tax, it's obviously a thing. I think, honestly, we're just happy that they spent so much to keep JT and bring back Didi. I think that was the mindset of Phillies fans. Like, oh, we got JT back. They actually spent the money to do that. But they're not going to go over the luxury tax for a team they don't believe in. So you can't fix all the holes. And, yeah, I mean, I feel like Dombrowski, you kind of just – you believe in the track record a little bit. You believe that he's going to make – honestly, the deadline's going to be very interesting. Because if they do nothing at the deadline again, like, what's the difference between this and the if we don't, we don't in McPhail quote?
I mean, that quote will live in infamy forever.
Oh, I mean, gold standard, if we don't, we don't, quarterback factory, like, are all
Bill
the
Giles
same.
Referring to Philadelphia as a small market team.
Yep.
That was one.
Yep. But if Dombrowski sits out the trade deadline or doesn't make the major upgrades, I think, you know, it'll be more of a shock than not, because Dombrowski, everywhere he's gone, he likes to be aggressive and go for the big, you know, prize out there. And given that Middleton opened up his wallet for Dombrowski, it feels like he would let him do what he needs to do to try to get this team back to the postseason for the first time in a decade.
Yeah, the good news is nobody's running away with the division.
Yeah,
Phillies,
well,
we're just about exactly a quarter through the season, and the Phillies are half a game behind the Mets, and the Braves are below 500, and Washington is five below 500, so it's there.
Well, and that's what makes it so frustrating too, Glenn, is that like they should be taking advantage of the division staying down, because I think the division is eventually going to figure it out. I just believe there's too much talent here for it not to figure it out a little bit. So like them starting slow and only being a game out of first place, like, great. What happens when the Braves get hot? What happens if the Mets continue to play Mets baseball? Like, I don't know. I feel like the Phillies missed an opportunity here.
Fair enough point. All right, coming up, we're going to talk to our pal Big Daddy Graham. He brings us a list every week. We'll see what he has. At noon, we become leading off, headed into Phillies baseball. Today, Phillies against the Toronto Blue Jays in Dunedin. Why didn't they stay and play in Buffalo, for God's sake?
Oh, it's too cold out there, Glenn. Come on. They're going to Buffalo in June, I think, by the way.
Good. They should.
Yeah, go take down your hometown.
He's Jack Fritz, in for Ray Dinger. I'm Glenn Mack. Now, WIP Sports Time is 11:22.
Here it comes! Here it comes! Here it comes! Here it comes! Who's that man? It's Big Daddy Graham. Better step back, Sam. It's Big Daddy Graham.
Hey, Big, who's the guy who says Aruga in that? I love that guy.
What?
The guy, in the middle of the song, the guy just goes like, Aruga.
I know. I think his name is Tim. But if they're listening right now, they'll probably call in it all, or they'll text me and say, no, it's, they made that song for me about 2 months after I was on the air. I've been playing it ever since. You play it, I play it. When I go on TV, people play it.
I love it. You know, what's the name of the group?
You think I would have sent them a check by now, don't you?
Yeah, but when I send you one. What's the name of the group?
A Gypsy Cab Drivers.
They're good. By the way, before we get into your stuff, I just want to tell people the Phillies lineup has come out for their game today against the Blue Jays. No Bryce Harper, no Real Muto, so... good luck. Okay. First of all, Ray Dinger is out with a bit of a stomach ailment. Jack Fritz is in for Ray. Don't know if you knew that, Big. But,
what's up, Big Daddy?
Hey, Jack. I love your tweets and Facebook comments, particularly on baseball. So get your thumbs ready there, Jack, because I'm about to say a lot of stupid stuff. You know, stupid stuff's always good to tweet out.
All right. Sounds good. I'm on it.
And you're the best. So what is our list today?
Well, I got to admit, I usually like all my lists to be very timely. I just could not come up with a very timely idea. I got one for next week, but not for this week. So I went to the old staple where famous things that happened on this date. And the very first Oscars took place on this date in 1929. At the Ambassador Hotel, by the way, which either one of you guys, if you're out in L.A., you should go to the Ambassador Hotel. It's just rich of history And the whole area is perfect. Grounds, Chinese Theater. It's a great place to go. So what I did, instead of just naming the obvious guys like De Niro and Kevin Costner who have played, you know, a lot of athletes, I'm going with best supporting role. Okay?
Okay.
I'm starting off with number five. It's hard to even think of them as a supporting role. They so stole the movie. That would be the Hanson brothers from Flatshot. Love them.
We had one of them on for Tell Us Your Story about a month or so ago. And Jack, you added, Jack always edits these things. He was hysterical. He was great.
Yeah, I mean, he was like, I guess, I mean, I have never seen the movie. Sorry.
What?
I know.
What?
I know. I'm sorry. I haven't seen
Slapshot. What the hell is wrong with you?
There's a lot. I'm not a big movie guy, but he was funny when I was listening to him.
That's a great...
he never saw the movie.
Well, I got a hunch he's never saw any of these then.
You might be right.
Okay. That's a great one to start.
I thought so. Coming in at number four, Dennis Hopper in Hoosiers.
Yeah.
It's not a role you see that often in a sports movie. Guy down on his luck, alcoholic, he's got his son on the team. Hackman gives him his big try. It's a great performance by Dennis Hopper. Any performance by Hopper where he's not killing people or blowing up cities, it's a good role for Dennis.
Can I give you a little tidbit about that? Because, you know, Ray and I wrote the book, The Ultimate Book of Sports Movies, right?
Yep.
And in doing the research, I discovered this. The scene where he stumbles and reels onto the court during a game when he's drunk, you remember that?
Yeah, I do.
What he did right before that scene was the old take a baseball bat, put your head on it, and turn circles. And he said, tell me 15 seconds before I come on. And he did that. And then went on.
So there was a slight stagger.
Oh, there was a good stagger.
It was a real good stagger. I'm just saying that's how he pulled it off.
Yes.
That is interesting. You have a future in radio, Glenn. All right.
Thank you, Big. Thanks.
Coming in at number three, he plays Roy Hobbs' manager in The Natural. His name is Wilford Brimley. And
yeah.
He's good in everything that he does. But he's so, so great as to never stop pitching Baseball Manager. I always liked Wilford Brimley anyway. And he's very, very good in that role.
He's great. Hold on, because I just want to say, he's great. And then his interplay with the guy who's the coach is just great.
Yeah, I used to know his name.
Yeah, another old-timer guy. He was great.
Yeah, he takes Hobbs after dinner. That's like his job. God, I should know his name.
I know Wilford Brimley's name in it is Pop Fisher. That's the name of his character, but I don't remember the other actor, who's also terrific.
And he is. He played a movie where he wanted to see his dying brother. The only means of transportation he had was a lawnmower.
Right. Drove it across Iowa.
That's right. Yeah. He did a great movie.
Yep.
Great movie. Coming in at number two, and he could easily be number one, and that would be Burt Young as Paulie in the Rocky movies.
Jack, you've seen that one, right?
Yes, I have.
Oh, there you go.
Wasn't he like 40 in that movie? Didn't you guys talk about this like 2 weeks ago that he was like 40, but he looked like he was like 60? Because he just turned like 87, but he's always looked super old.
Yes.
Hey, Jack, stick to baseball. Okay. I'm only kidding. We want your participation.
Well, these are all movies that I got. Sorry, haven't seen The Natural. I know. But
wait, you haven't seen The Natural either?
I know. Yeah.
What the hell?
I know. It's bad.
By the way, Richard Farnsworth, the name of the actor we couldn't think of.
Ah, very good.
Yeah.
Should we switch to porn movies? You think Jack's seen any of those?
Nope.
Not with his wife listening.
All right. And coming in, coming in at number one, Bob Uecker as Harry Doyle in Major League. I love that role.
So
he
great.
Makes me laugh. Just looking at him, I laugh.
That's a great answer.
That's great.
It's a super role. I almost went with the bus in Slapshot. Jack, they have this bus that's following the team all around, and they're based on the Broad Street Bullies, really, kind of.
Huh.
And they're getting ready. They're playing an away game, and all their nutty fans hop on this bus, and one of the fans is beating the bus with a sledgehammer. And one of the other guys goes, what the hell are you doing? And the guy goes, got to make the bus look mean.
Yeah, it was great. Hey, Big, you were 5 for 5 today.
Yes. Yes.
All terrific.
Then I want Jack on every week.
Agreed.
So tell me about the podcast, the 100 greatest albums in the history of rock. I saw you put Sgt. Pepper's in at what, like number 15 or so?
Yeah, it didn't make it in there. I'm waiting on Joe Conklin and Mark Zumoff's albums.
All right. Very entertaining stuff, though. Really good stuff.
It is. And we'll do another list when we're done with the music one. And there will be a sports list. People are actually listening. People are actually buying advertising. Just go to BigDaddyGram.com, and you'll be right there and entertained for hours to come.
Is Sgt. Pepper the highest rated Beatles band, a Beatles album, or no?
No, it is not.
All right, good.
Ooh.
Interesting. That's called a tease.
That is a good tease. Is the chapter I did for you still the best?
Oh, without a doubt.
There you go.
I do expect Jack's segment, though, to do much better than yours.
Best album since 2010?
I should go for one of them. I'm old, so everything comes down sounding old.
Yeah, you know? You're great. Hey, Big, right. It's always a pleasure to talk to you, my friend, and be well.
Bye-bye.
All right, thanks, Big
Daddy. Thank you so much. There you go. Love the guy. Love them.
Yeah.
Hey, by the way, just a little bit. I tell you, we'll give you more of the Phillies lineup coming up. But yes, no Harper, no Real Muto today. Not a surprise.
No.
And just one other thing I want to get to before we leave at the top of the hour. I don't know if people saw this yesterday. The New York Football Giants have signed Super Bowl hero Corey Clement. Oh no.
Yeah.
I hate that.
Well, listen. Clement grew up here, right? But grew up.
Yeah, his father was at every postgame show and pregame show.
But he grew up a Cowboys fan. So, listen, he's one of the Philadelphia Cowboys fans, and if he wants to take that up,
you hold that against him after all these years?
Yeah, of course I do.
He's the guy who took the snap on the Philly special.
Yeah, and he caught the ball in the end zone that I'm not sure was a catch. Yeah,
it was. He had like 100 receiving yards that day.
Yeah, it was unbelievable. He's almost MVP of the game, him and Aguilar.
Yes. So I will always have a spot in my heart for Corey Clement.
Yeah, but then you realize that he's one of these Philadelphia Cowboys fans.
Oh, come on.
Back
I hate the
in
Cowboys
high
as much as anybody. He's going to be on the Giants. That's the point.
I know.
I hate when they go to the Giants.
Well, I'm actually surprised he's not going to the Cowboys, given his allegiance to them.
All right,
But yes, it is sad that. Well, it's not really sad. I mean, he hasn't been good since the Super Bowl. But
I know. But you know, I don't like going and playing for the enemy.
Because if he gets out there, then you have
if
you have to
good,
root against him. Right.
Yes, I don't like rooting against him. Anyway, we'll come back. We see got a couple of people on hold. We will get to all of you coming up. 215-592-9494 with Jack Fritz. I'm Glenn Mack now. On 94 WIP. This is Big. We were talking to Big Daddy, you just saw this come out on the Twitter.
Oh, on the Twitter, that's right. Jay Wright has been inducted into the Naismith Basketball Hall of Fame for next year's class.
Wow. That's so great. I mean, deserving. Certainly deserving. Just a local treasure. More than 600 wins, 2 national titles. A great guy, just a terrific, down-to-earth, charitable, good man. Real believer in Philadelphia basketball above and beyond Villanova. He's done a tremendous job there. I don't know what to say, but hearty congratulations to him.
Yeah, I mean, probably the best coach. I'd say behind Andy Reid, probably the best coach of my lifetime in Philadelphia. The two titles obviously speak for themselves. And that,
yeah, Andy didn't win the two Super Bowls here.
He did not.
Super Bowl here. Jay won two.
Right. The 2018 Nova team was probably one of the best college basketball teams I've seen in my life. And then the run in 2016 was really fun. That was during Philly sports when there was like nothing to celebrate.
Yeah,
besides like Taney and that Nova team.
Yeah, the Little League team.
Yeah, I mean, because the Sixers, I think, won 10 games. No, this is right at the beginning of the process, so that didn't happen. The Phillies lost 100 games. The Flyers were the Flyers, and the Eagles, that was Doug's first year. So,
yep.
And that game was crazy, too. Yeah, the
phenomenal game.
Everyone forgets the Marcus Page shot, which I was like, oh, classic. Another Philly team's going to lose. But then, obviously, the Chris Jenkins shot. So,
yeah. Hey, congratulations to Jay Wright. We're delighted to hear that. That's great news. Mark in Montgomeryville is with us. Hello, Mark.
How's it going, guys?
All right.
What's up, Mark?
Jack, great to hear you, Jack.
Oh, I appreciate that. Thank you.
Sounds awesome. So I'm actually calling them. I want to talk a little Eagles, but actually I'm going to pivot to Phillies because they suck, but we'll get to that in a second. You were talking about the mayor of Easttown a few weeks ago.
Yeah.
Glenn, so I have two really close, strangely close connections to that show. So the woman who plays the receptionist at the police office is actually a very close friend, a music director at a church she goes to in Hatboro. So
nice.
I've known her. Yeah, she's in all the Bradley Cooper movies, and so she has little cameos. It's cool to see her. But then, second,
there is some local talent in that, which is nice to see that they hired some local actors.
Yeah, you could tell by the accent. So, my wife, so she's the second connection. There's a scene where Kate Winslet's smoking a cigarette outside, and you hear kind of some singing, very like distant. My wife and I are both professional musicians, and she was the singer singing. In the background during that scene, it was kind of crazy. We were watching it, and my wife was like, oh my gosh, that's me.
That's me. Wow. Yeah. That's very exciting. It's a good show. I don't think it's a great show, but it's depressing, but it's a good and compelling show. And Mark, there's so much Delco in that show.
From
the Wawa to the Coco's cheesesteaks to the unsolved murder in Upper Darby to everything. It's, you watch that show, it's all Delco.
It's dark, though. It's like
very
bath or shower afterward. Bath
without telling anybody, the ending of last week's was looking forward to watching it tonight. What do you got on the birds?
Okay, I'm actually going to pivot to the Phillies because you guys have been talking a lot of Phillies. The thing that's really concerning is, number one, they don't develop any players. But number two, there's nothing you can point to and say they're good at that. Just not one thing. No fundamental element of baseball. Not even like a small secondary element of good baseball. They're not good at anything. They're just at best mediocre at some things.
You go for it, Jack.
Yeah, I mean, like I kind of brought that up earlier. I mean, the defense, I don't see that getting much better. Like, I guess I just don't know what they're going to get better at other than hopefully the back of the baseball cards show up on the offensive side. I mean, Archie Bradley cannot be the key cog of the bullpen that if he's not there, that everything's going to fall apart.
Is he David Robertson? Is that what we got with him?
No, well, I mean, he's on his rehab assignment, so he pitched last night, so he's on his way back. But the David Robertson thing, I mean, that was a 2-year, $24 million deal. At least Archie Bradley's just 1 year, and we'll see how it goes. But yeah, I mean, they're not, and that's what honestly it's been so disappointing about Joe Girardi, because I thought when he was going to come here, I thought we were going to get fundamental good baseball. These guys weren't going to screw up, and it's been more of the same.
And
I'm
one of these guys, I always want to see moves made at the deadline, but I know Dombrowski is sort of, a wild card with that, but I don't even know why he would bother with this team. I mean,
I don't know what move are you going to make that's going to put you close. Hey, thanks, and I will, do you know if your wife or your cousin, whatever, is going to be in any more episodes?
My wife probably definitely not. I know that the woman from my church, I saw on IMDb, she's in at least six of them, and I think I've only seen her three times. So
nice. Well, good.
Yeah.
Hey,
yeah.
Nice to hear from you. Appreciate it. I mean, if the trade deadline is a week from now, Jack, what are they What are you going to do?
It's so tough because it feels like center field's kind of been, you know, righted a bit here with Odubel, unfortunately, but and McCutchen's picked it up. So
that's by the way, I've said this before and I'll say it again. I am a believer that Odubel gets a second chance after all of this. He's done everything he was required to do. I think people get second chances, but I hear you. But go on.
Yeah, it was weird because he hit the home run the other night, and I wasn't like that pumped, and I usually would be pumped, but whatever. Mm-hmm. But it seems like he's hitting the ball well. He's playing good baseball. So it seems like that's been fixed a little bit. McCutchen's playing better. You know, I guess it would be you'd want another starter, but you're not bringing in a bat to, you know, take Didi's spot, Bohm's spot, Segura's spot. Like, they kind of are what they are. I mean, that's where we're at with this Phillies team, is that they kind of are what they are. You could add a fourth starter. You could add a bullpen piece. But there's nothing they can really do at the deadline that would put them severely over the top.
They're kind of stuck, yeah. Yeah, I think that's exactly right. I don't know what they do. By the way, assuming since you've never seen anything good that we've discussed, that you aren't watching Mare of Easttown on HBO.
No, I'm not, because we lost HBO in the move. But I would like to watch it. I heard good things, and I do love the Philly accent, so I would like to check it out. That's for sure.
Yeah. You know, I do every weekend. I do what we're watching, right, and give TV tips. And I know you listen to the show. Do you ever follow my TV tips?
I do. My mom is obsessed with them. She's like, oh, Glenn told me to watch this, so I watch that. So she values your opinion very heavily when it comes to watching TV shows.
If I got one Fritz, if I got the mom, I got the heart of the family.
That's right.
Good.
That's right.
Tell your mom I appreciate that. Let's go to our friend Buzz up in Buffalo. Hey, how are you?
I'm good, Glenn. How are you?
All right,
thanks for taking my call. Jack, I just got to tell you, all right, Slapshot is a must-watch, time well spent,
right,
and also The Natural. And I was going to talk about the Bills comeback game, and I'll get to that in a second, but I was actually, you know, so The Natural was filmed in Buffalo,
yeah,
and I was in the scene in the stands where he hits the cover off, or Hobbs hits the cover off the ball right down at the old rock pile.
All right, can you find yourself? Because I've been in movies and scenes like that, and only occasionally can I find myself.
I can't find myself, no.
Right.
I mean, I was 12 years old, and my mother made me go because she wanted to see Robert Redford. So,
sounds about right.
But, yeah, I was at the comeback game. And so the Bills are losing 28-3 at halftime. And I was about 10 friends of mine. And the only reason we didn't leave is because at the end of halftime, they cut off beer sales. So we stocked up. And the Bills are getting the ball to start the second half. So we're like, we're going to stock up on beer and whatever. And Frank Reich was the quarterback, of course, our boy Frank Reich, you know, miracle man.
It was amazing. It was one of the greatest things I've ever seen. And he is a great, great guy.
Oh, yeah, I've met him on multiple occasions. He's a wine guy, and I'm a winemaker. So anyway, so he throws an interception to start, you know, the Bills are getting the ball, so, you know, start the second half. He throws an interception, wasn't his fault, went off the tight end's hands, pick six. Now it's 35-3.
Yep.
And my friends, the only reason we didn't leave is because we each had like 32 ounces of beer with us. You know, everyone else was leaving. And then all of a sudden the Bills scored 4 touchdowns in under 8 minutes. And it was electric.
It was the most amazing thing I've ever seen. And listen, people know I'm a Bills fan. I grew up there. But just covering that game as a reporter and watching all that unfold was, it's impossible to come back from that. And yet they did. And that stadium, which was dead, came alive. It was all in all, it was just a great, great day. Great experience for me.
It was. And real quick on the Blue Jays, in playing in Buffalo, they are starting June 1st.
Nice.
And I will be going to games. I'm a big baseball fan. And when the Phillies come to town, I'll let you guys know that I'm coming, and I'll give you a report on how everything goes.
Yeah, we'll like that. All right, Buzz. Thanks a ton. I appreciate it.
What, is this the Bills Radio Network? I mean, come on. Reminiscing about the comeback game?
Yeah, it was pretty good. You asked me to name the most interesting news I covered as a reporter, and that was one of them.
I know. I just didn't think we're gonna do some vet memories next, you know?
Unfortunately, we got to get off the air in a minute.
It was a great game.
We are not going to have the opportunity to do that.
We
just have really about 2 minutes to go. A couple quick things. Terrell Owens said yesterday that the Eagles are going to win the NFC East because of Jalen Hurts. Your thoughts?
Absolutely not. But it's this optimism. I'm like, I don't want to kill people's optimism, but like, can we relax here for a second?
They 11 have wins.
Yeah, I mean, Marcus Hayes is writing a column about 12 wins. Elliott's at 11. Callers like Wade and Chester's at 11 wins.
It's what about
like,
your guys? The guys you do the show with? Where's Ike?
Ike struggled to get to 9, but he got there because. because he has to get there.
Yeah.
And
yeah, I can't say 6 being Ike. He just can't do it.
No, he can't. He can't. He's too positive, which we love. And John's in the 7-ish win range, which I think is the correct, you know, way to be. I don't know, like what, like they're a old team but also transitioning team, and Jalen Hurts, we have no idea. He played 4 games last year, did a decent job. And Nick Sirianni's a wild card. I mean, we don't even know what Nick Sirianni's offense looks like. I mean, apparently it's going to be hard for the defense to understand, but easy for the offense to understand. I don't know what that means.
I don't know what that means either.
Yeah, it's just, yeah, I feel genuinely, as an Eagles fan, I feel a breath of fresh air with this team. Like, it feels like the Doug and Wentz, you know, that cloud, the infighting is kind of gone. So, like, it feels refreshing. And Devontae Smith, who, whatever. But, like, I'm not going.
I'm excited
wins.
For something new and different and so on. But Andy Reid was 5-11 his first year, and I'm not sure why I would expect different.
Exactly. Okay. Exactly.
All right, we're going to take a break. We're going to come back with Leading Off, taking you into Philly's Blue Jays.